It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
You are something else, dude. And we're going to get to this Emmanuel conversation in just a second, but you just told me that you used to wear white, but you just made a conscious decision you don't wear white anymore.
I used to, you know, because I used to always wear, like, Nike gear.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always the dry fit shirt. So I have, like, 20 white dry fit shirts. And I used to wear nothing but white dry fit shirts.
Literally 20 white. Or do you have, like, 7 and you're saying 20? Or is it, like, literally 20?
No, it's like 20.
It's like 20 white dry fits.
Yep. And then black is probably, because I've gone more to black now. So yep. It's black is probably 10 to 15.
So you got gray, 10 to 15 gray, Nike dry fits.
Yeah, gray is 10 to 15 also.
And then you got another set of 10 to 15 gray dry fits.
Yes.
I don't barely see you wear any of them.
I don't wear them anymore. I don't wear much Nike dry fit anymore.
Why?
Nothing touches this body but pure silk.
That's it, baby. Was that Chris Tucker? Yeah. Love me some Chris Tucker. I don't know.
Why the change?
I don't know. The change. I've kind of...
It's like more grown?
Yeah. You know what I wear now? A little bit. I wear Lululemon now.
Is that right?
Yes.
You got yoga pants?
I like the way it fits. Haven't put on a pair of the yoga pants yet. I'm working towards that.
Buttercream, croc skin.
But it's black. I've gone more to the black and the grays. So we'll see in another couple years. It might be red and blues.
All right. I'll keep an eye on it.
Yep.
I was a little bit moved yesterday when I heard those guys having
conviction.
The conversation. I felt a conviction. I did. And listeners who have been listening to this show for any length of time between Stokely and myself may have heard me touch on this in the past. And I'm hoping you remember. I believe... In my heart of hearts, if the Broncos had to win a football game and my life depended on it, and I was the head coach, and my life depended on it, and we had to move the ball, we had to get first downs, we had to score points, life depends on it, there's no way possible I would not have Emmanuel Sanders working the slot at least half of the time. I think Emmanuel Sanders is dynamic. We've had the conversation. I think he's the most dynamic football player on this team offensively. He is shifty. He is a stop-and-go, change-gears guy. And those guys, with those attributes, with the great hands that Emmanuel has, shred, not with a hatchet, but with a scalpel, the middle of the football field. And I think Emmanuel Sanders, by not embracing that role enough, actually, and I don't even know if he realizes it, but I think it does a disservice to this football team. I'm not saying full-time slot, but I'm saying half of the time. Because right now, we don't have a surefire slot guy. We can project that Deshaun Hamilton could be that guy. We could wonder or guess or hope that Isaiah McKenzie or Carlos Henderson or any. But I'll tell
team
you
Isaiah.
What, Team Isaiah? Look at you.
Look at me.
All right, I'm not even going to go down that road right now because I'm in too good of a mood. But here's the thing, Stoke. What would make me feel much more comfortable than saying, Emmanuel, you're outside, DT, you're outside, and we're going to have an inexperienced guy work the middle of the field when we know we desperately need it? What would make me feel so much more comfortable is we say, Cortland Sutton, we're microwaving your development. You're going to play.
Oh, don't say microwave. Last time we heard microwave, yep. It's for Paxton.
Yep, we're going to nuke it.
Right.
We're going to, half the time, Cortland Sutton, you're going to be on the outside. Essentially. 75 DT, you're going to be on the outside. But if you had Emmanuel in the middle of the field, I think it would just give teams fits.
I think you'll see more of Emmanuel in the slot this year than you have in the past. I don't think you'll see it 50% of the time. Vance has said it's going to be more by committee. They don't have that one guy, and that's how he prefers it. I don't want to put Emmanuel in there a lot if he doesn't. If it's not something that he doesn't want to do. Listen, because if he doesn't want to do it, which he said he doesn't mind it, as long as you're throwing him the ball, right? So, but if he doesn't feel comfortable in there, I don't want to put somebody in there that doesn't feel comfortable working the slot. It's a total different position than outside. You'll see him in there. I think you'll see him in there more than we saw him the last few years, and I think he'll be just fine with it, and I think it will be a weapon for the Broncos because it is easier to throw a Courtland Sutton or Deshaun Hamilton outside right away and than whether trying to put them in the slot and make it work their rookie season. Now, Isaiah McKenzie will be in there some, for sure, but Emmanuel will play more in there, and I think it will help the young guys develop them by starting them outside more than giving them more time inside.
And I wasn't trying to lobby for anything happening 100% of the time, but I think Emmanuel needs to be more pliable and willing because you heard Alfred give the numbers. The league average in the middle of the football field is 92.9 rating. Case Keenum's rating is 130 in the middle of the field. So for Emmanuel Sanders to say, yeah, I'll play in the slot if the ball's going there, guess what, pal? It's going there. Case Keenum works the middle of the field. There's only three or four quarterbacks who do it or did it as good as he did last year. So I think Emmanuel, if he embraced that role, I think he'd have 100 receptions. I do. I think he'd be Jarvis Landry. I do. And his yards per catch.
I worry about him holding up.
Because he's the slight frame?
Yeah. I worry about him holding up. Tough guy, though. So, you know, had the injuries last year a little bit, banged up ankle. That would be my one concern with doing it too much. But I think he would be excellent, obviously. I mean, he has all the traits to be really good inside. Fast, quick, explosive. So I think you'll see him more in there, though. I do. And I think he'll get a lot of benefits from being in there. And I think the Broncos would also.
Listen to our guy, Alfred, compare Trevor Siemian, and Case Keenum's passer rating.
He's actually above average or at average.
On almost everything except throwing the ball left. In comparison.
Isn't that interesting?
In comparison, take a look real quick at Trevor Siemian's hit chart.
He's all over the place.
Oh.
He's terrible in the same areas that Case Keenum is fantastic in.
The only number where Trevor Siemian is clearly better is throwing the ball left deep.
That is correct. Look at that.
But Guess what? Demaryius Thomas didn't have a great year last year because Trevor Siemian is awful throwing the ball deep right.
Why would Case Keenum struggle so much deep left?
I don't know.
It's a very interesting conversation. Now, when you compare the numbers side by side, Trevor to Case, from this past year, it's not close. It's check, check, check for Case, and I think we all know that, except this one phase. Deep left. Back left. Concerns at all there?
No.
When Emmanuel does play on the outside, more oftentimes than not always, but he's on the left side of the field a lot. No concerns?
No concerns for me. Obviously, if there is an issue there, and it doesn't kind of, the numbers don't stack up comparatively to the other sides of the field, in the middle, intermediate, deep right, I would have to see how many attempts and what they look like. You know, so I'd have to go out there and really watch the film and see, you know, what were a couple of the balls dropped? You know, how many balls did he throw deep left this year? Was it 10? And was he 4 for 10? And did he have 3 drops? Or, you know, things like that. I would want to dig into it a little bit more than just say, right now, like, I'm really nervous about his deep left ball. I want to watch him in training camp. Now I'll pay attention to it a lot more. How does he look throwing the ball deep left? Because obviously, if you're a quarterback and that is to more of your blind side of the field, right? Because you're your right-handed quarterback. Yep. That's where you're throwing it back across your body a little bit more, and maybe it's something that he needs to just pay attention to and work on a little bit during training camp and can get things fixed. And maybe it's not a big deal at all, but it's something that now I will pay attention to.
You're aware,
especially
of it
during training camp. Yes,
I like it.
So, and then I'll come up with my own conclusion.
There you go.
And I'll let everybody know.
Stoke is on the case.
Yes. Wow, look at that.
Pun intended. Pun-tended.
Look at that.
Pun-tended.
Wow.
How about this, Stoke? NFL.com.
You're on your game today.
Appreciate it. NFL.com ranked the 16 greatest quarterbacks of all time. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Where was Elway? Where was your boy? We'll find out next. This is always the time of year where you see stuff like this online on the World Wide Web, Stoke. And there I was, clicking on the link. So that's what I do. NFL.com ranked the 16 greatest quarterbacks of all time. And ranked them in order. This was Gil Brandt, who I did like this. Gil. You like Gil?
Yeah,
does
he's
a
been
pretty good job.
A long, long time.
Right?
Yeah.
Why don't you just throw out some all-time great names? I'll tell you where they ranked.
Start at the top, Peyton Manning.
He is number two on the list.
Oh, I thought I liked Gil. Maybe not so much anymore.
kidding aside, because I know we oftentimes have fun with this stuff. And for obvious reasons, you and Peyton are very close through the years. When stuff like this comes out, because inevitably every year you see lists like this, if it's not Gil Brandt, someone else. Brady is number one on this list. Peyton's number two. You know, you can kind of predict that. But does this sort of piss Peyton off like a little bit? Sort of like irritate him a little bit?
I don't think so. I think he's very aware of different opinions from different people.
Sure.
You know, it is what it is. And anytime you have lists like this, you have voting or you have one person's opinion, does that really make it a fact?
Of course not.
Right, it doesn't. And so
there's no facts to be had, really.
I really don't think Peyton cares. I don't think he cares. I really don't. And I think when you look at his career, I think he feels good about, you know what, every single day he worked his tail
off
to be great. And so it doesn't matter how people view him as the best or second, or if they think Brady's the best. I don't think that bothers him at all. I really don't.
I could see why it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
you drive yourself nuts.
Of course, right. But that being said, Peyton seems like he's been so competitive and just, you know, cerebral through the years that maybe that would bother him. But again, we're arguing if you're the best or second best ever.
At positions like that you both play, so you never really competed against you. It's not like tennis.
Right.
Where you go one-on-one with these guys. It's like you're on different teams. You got different coaches. And so it's, yeah, you played against each other, but you really didn't. Your teams did.
Right.
Right. But I don't think that he gives a hoot about really, you know, if Gil Brandt had him one and had Brady two.
It wouldn't affect his day.
No, not at all.
He's
right now, he's just worried about, you know, hitting that 8-iron to, you know, on the green.
Right, right.
That's what he's more concerned with.
I am sure that's the case. Who do you think was third all time after Brady and Peyton?
Montana?
Correct. Let's just keep going. Who do you think was fourth?
Ooh, all time, man. You can't forget about like the likes of Johnny Unitas.
He's on the list. Yeah. Johnny Unitas is seventh, according to Gil Brandt.
Dan Marino's on the list. Elway's on the list.
He went to the same, according to Gil Brandt, the fourth greatest quarterback of all time went to the same school as Trevor Siemian.
Wow. That must be an old timer. Sid Luckman, Otto Graham.
Just throw
out names. I don't know.
Otto Graham.
Okay, there we go.
Otto Graham. He has as the fourth greatest quarterback of all time. Then he goes to John Elway.
Okay.
So,
where was Dan Marino?
Dan Marino was ninth.
Okay.
According to Gil Brandt. And I'll just give you the top ten. Troy Aikman, number 10. Dan Marino, number 9. Brett Favre, number 8. Johnny Unitas, number 7. Roger Staubach as number 6, and then you get into John Elway, Otto Graham, Joe Montana, Peyton, and Brady.
I was forgetting about Brett Favre. Goodness.
I think he might, too. According to his quotes, I mean, he forgot half of his snaps.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
It was about a month ago. He said that he won the MVP, and I think he's got 4, I want to say. But he said he won one of his MVPs. I think the quote was, I was on a, how did he say it? He was on pills.
Yeah. Yeah. I do remember that.
Oh, he said, yes. I won the MVP on a pill buzz.
Yeah. So I do remember that.
What? Like, that's how talented he was. That your life could be that sort of, you know, off the rails. Because that when that stuff digs its claws in you, I think we know by now. And for him to operate as a professional quarterback, the MVP of the league.
Well, yeah, it's well documented his issues that he had and some of his addictions that he had when he played.
Yeah.
So if you're high functioning, some of these people can be, addicts can be very high functioning.
Right.
Because,
especially if you're uber talented.
Right.
I mean, we've seen artists do it for years in music and things like that. Other noteworthy names on the list in the top 16, I'm not sure why it was the 16, but it starts with Jim Kelly. He's got Drew Brees on this list, Fran Tarkenton, Warren Moon, Terry Bradshaw as the 12th greatest quarterback of all time, Sammy Baugh as the 11th quarterback of all time. I got to be honest with you. I do like chatting about this because I just like talking quarterbacks. I like talking hierarchy and history of the game. But I really don't like it when you go down the road and you start to compare a quarterback like Otto Graham, who was drafted in 1944, and you're comparing him to Peyton Manning at the line of scrimmage in 2012.
How do you do that? How do you compare those different eras? You're just so hard to compare, you know, the 70s with the 90s and the 80s with where we are today, and it's just...
Well, even...
It makes for a fun conversation, but it's hard to do.
Sammy Baugh. Like, if you told me right now, you can have Sammy Baugh or right. Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan in a hurry, you know? But it's fun. It's this time of year where you see stuff like this and Mount Rushmore stuff. It's you know, it's the off season, and that's what we do. But just for a it's like a sale for a limited time only. Because I'll tell you, dude, what is the date? The 6th? We are 28 days from the first preseason game. Not training camp, from the first Hall of Fame game, right? Hall okay. of Fame game is, oh, I believe, on the
glad I never had to play in that
27th,
because those teams have to report like a week earlier than everybody else.
Is that right?
Oh yeah, it's a punishment if you have to play in that game. What's you got extra time? You're reporting to camp a week before everybody else because look when the game is.
Right.
It's not fun.
I don't even know.
You don't want to, and you play in an extra preseason game.
Oh, that's an extra game that doesn't count as a preseason game.
I think you play in five now. I believe you play in five. Maybe it's four, but I thought it was you play in five.
Yeah, I believe that'll happen on the 27th, and
Broncos open up 28th. Correct?
No, excuse me. This is on August 2nd. So under a month, still under a month. August 2nd. Geez, so it's the 6th.
Don't even try it.
Yeah, yeah, all right. I don't even know.
Just like 20-something days.
I've always struggled with the days and the months.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I told you don't even try it.
Couldn't tell you.
Right.
Stokely stoked up, and we'll get hyped next.
What's Brandon Stokely?
Yeah, I'm so stoked.
Stoked up about today.
Zach, I was wondering why I walked in today and Raj had a big old smile on his face. Carmelo and Oklahoma City look like they're parting ways, and Raj is getting these grand ideas in his head that Carmelo is going to be back in Denver with the Nuggets again for part two. And I'm here to tell you, no, 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 it's not going to happen. Don't let it happen. Look, we've moved on. We got a good thing going here. We're happy now. Look, I would never get back with an old girlfriend that dropped me for another guy. Would you?
Mm.
Would you?
Mm-mm.
No, that's what happened. He left us for the bright lights of New York. And now when he can't play anymore, we want to welcome him back here to Denver. Are you kidding me? We moved on. It's a Jokic era. Sorry, Carmelo, you're not welcome back in Denver. And Zach, that's what I'm stoked up about.
Brandon Stokely's stoked up.
That's what I'm talking about. Not welcome back in Denver.
No.
Like, don't even come visit.
Nope. Nope.
Like, I better not see you at DIA.
Nope. Don't want to see you here. You gave us a stiff arm. You gave us the Heisman. And you hightailed out of town. Now, when you're no good, we want you back here, please.
This came from Adrian Wojnarowski, along with Royce Young of ESPN, tweeted this morning, Oklahoma City, Carmelo Anthony will part ways this summer, likely saving the team over $100 million.
Not 10.
No. Thunder working with Melo's reps on exit that includes trade, stretch provision, end quote. That's from Adrian Wojnarowski, Woj, who has taken over the NBA news breaking cycle. Yeah, because OKC is just so far over the tax. I mean, it was a historic $300 million-plus cost for the Oklahoma City roster. Think about that statement. The Oklahoma City Thunder had a roster that was looking at $100 million. It's just incredible. But because of the way the tax works, and it's sort of like, remember those exponents in math? They put the smaller number in the corner. Hate those. Hate those exponents. But you don't multiply it times that number. You multiply it by the number over and over again.
I don't remember the exponents.
Multiplies unto itself.
Like if you had a penny a day and it just, you know, you keep doubling it every day.
Sort of like that.
That's
correct.
The tax, you know, every year gets more and more.
Correct.
If you keep going over it.
Correct. So it's like an exponent. So
It just keeps getting bigger.
It keeps getting better.
There we go.
It keeps getting bigger.
How about the exponents?
Correct.
I forgot about those.
So because, although, you know, Melo wasn't, you know, going to cost Oklahoma City $100 million going into his direct deposit this season, that's what it ends up being if you move on from him. And they'll do a stretch provision. They'll pay him like $9 million for the next 3 years. Sort of like you can think of it the way that Houston Texans were on the hook for Brock Osweiler's money. That's why he didn't care if he signed for the Broncos for $1 million or a dollar, like he said. So you're not open to it at all. You're not open to it at all.
No, look, if that happens, I'm not watching one game.
You
so don't
watch
ask
a game?
Me anything
oh.
about the Nuggets because I won't watch one game.
Okay.
I'd be so disappointed in that organization that if they welcomed him back.
Do you think they would?
No.
Not you. Do you think they would?
No.
I think we differ. That's where I think we differ. I think I wouldn't if I were Tim Connelly, but I think in my gut they would welcome him back.
Why? Tell me why. He's not going to sell more tickets, is he?
I don't know.
He's going to be coming off the bench. He's not playing a starting role. So do I want to pay to watch an aging player come off the bench and play bad basketball? No, thank you.
Right.
It's not Michael Jordan we're talking
simple.
About here.
No, it's
okay?
not. No,
so
it's not.
So it's not like you're watching one of the greats just, a little bit past his prime.
So he's not one of the greats?
No.
Okay, good.
No, I'm
good.
Talking about top 10 good. Players in the NBA type
perfect.
Of player.
Perfect.
Okay.
As long as we're on the same page, because I don't hold him in that regard at all. But that being said,
he's a very good player.
He's going to end up in the Hall of Fame.
Sure. I mean, he had a great college
All-Star,
career.
Four-time
You're talking about
Olympic,
college career, too.
National championship
right.
at Syracuse. He doesn't need to play another possession of basketball. He'll go to the Hall of Fame. But I don't hold him in that regard. I just don't. I just don't. He doesn't play. The last thing that you could say, and this is probably the worst insult that you could give someone, and it's the opposite of the best compliment I think you could give someone. And I've heard coaches say this to me throughout my life. They would say the best compliment you could give is when they say, that guy plays hard. He just plays hard as hell. His pants are on fire every possession. The last thing you would ever say about Carmelo Anthony nowadays is that he plays with a sense of urgency.
Is he a top 25 player, all-time player?
Absolutely not.
Top 50?
Probably on the back end of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean,
We're on the same wavelength here.
I know. Feels good going in the weekend.
It does. Feels great.
Feels great. We'll see. We'll see where he ends up. Is it L.A.? Is it Houston? Is it, what's the other one I'm missing? L.A., Houston.
Golden State.
Golden State. But here's the kicker. Here's why you should absolutely, and whether you still have an affinity or nostalgia for Melo, that's cool. I mean, the guy's one of the great players ever in franchise history, if not the greatest player. And if he's not, he's probably number two. Here's why you can feel that way, but not be wanting him back in Denver. Do you know what happened to the Oklahoma City title odds since this morning? Guess.
What happened to
the Oklahoma City Thunder title odds?
Because
since this
they're
morning.
Going to be moving away from Carmelo, it got better.
It got better. How about that? So you can't ever spin to me that if you think he's the 25th greatest player of all time, your odds go up when that guy walks in the room. They are telling you, the odds makers, who are objective and non-sentimental.
They're just looking to make money.
They're looking to make money. Now, the Thunder didn't have much odds anyway, but they doubled since he left this morning. Think about that. That's incredible. It speaks for itself.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Speaks
Enough
for itself.
Enough said. Really. That's the mic drop.
It's the mic drop.
That's as objective as you get, just partial.
Partial. I like it. Pragmatic. Without emotion.
That too.
We got to talk about this. I got to bounce this off you because I am not a big golf guy. But my interest, when I saw this story from Sports Illustrated, it hit the top floor. Are Tiger and Phil going to do a made-for-TV one-on-one golf one-on-one golf match for $10 million?
I've heard about this. A buddy of mine about 3-4 weeks ago mentioned something like that this was in the works.
So before this hit the headlines,
yeah,
you
about
got
3-4 weeks ago, a buddy of mine that
keep your ear to the street.
Yeah, was talking about this type of match. I don't know who he got it from, but I'd been hearing about it. Winner take all, you know, one match on TV, which would be awesome. Tiger Phil doesn't get any better, bigger and better than that. I would love to see that. 10 million, winner take all.
Oh,
that's pretty
man.
Good stuff.
I mean, count me in. And you and I have talked about golf in the past. I need to be forcibly put in front of a situation. Like, it's got to be so good. It's got to be Tiger on the back nine on a Sunday for me to be engaged.
Right.
That's just where I'm at. I'm not a big golf guy. This right here, I wouldn't miss this. Because this, to me, are the two most recognizable golfers in the world. Do you agree with that statement? Phil and Tiger, two most recognizable golfers in the world. After Tiger, would it be Phil?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Moves my needle, man.
Yep.
I wouldn't miss it. I'd pay for it, actually. If they wanted to do a pay-per-view type of thing, I don't think they would, because I think there'd be so much money with network TV getting it on their channel, like CBS or NBC or whatever the case. But if they said, you know, I would pay for it like I paid for the last fight, you know, I ordered.
Right. Yeah, I would, too. It's going to be interesting to see if it gets done.
Do you think it will?
I do. There's enough money to be made when you're talking about a $10 million winner-take-all and, you know, TVs are looking for good kind of content like this, something a little bit different that will draw viewers to their station. This is it. I mean, a lot of people, it's like the McGregor Mayweather.
You just plucked the thought from my head,
dude.
I did
it again.
Get off. Get out of my head.
Goodness. Get out of my head. High five.
Dude, I'll tell you.
There we go. High five. But it's like that because there's so much money to be made that, you know what, they'll figure it out and they'll make it work. And now, obviously, it's not the $100 million or whatever. But at the same time, when you're talking about $10 million or whatever it's going to be, winner take all, probably maybe an appearance fee also.
Sure.
I mean, the loser's not walking away with nothing.
There's no
way. I can promise you that.
Right.
So, a lot of money to be made here, and why not? And you might be able to piggyback that with a, you know, if it's good enough, Tiger Field Part 2 the following year. You know how
wow.
you have the sequels and stuff.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it goes, but I would definitely watch. How about you, listeners? What do you think? RamosLaw.com, text line 303-713-1043. Would you watch it?
Oh, my. I wouldn't miss it. I just wouldn't. And, again, this is coming from a non-golf
right.
guy. Here's a
and
question
that,
I
that's
ask.
Important. The non-golf people, would you tune in to see this event?
Let me ask you this. If this ended up happening, say they did it on CBS on a Sunday, does it outdraw the Masters in terms of a rating?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say no.
Really? I think you're wrong, dude, because you're pulling the peripheral people like me.
Maybe so. Maybe so. You got Tiger.
It's
and you
Tiger.
Got Phil.
And Phil.
And it's like having Tiger on, you know, the lead on a Sunday of the Masters.
Right.
So that's,
for 10
I mean,
million?
That's, right. That's a good that's a good question.
Phil,
it'd be interesting
Phil's
to see
used
what
his heart rate going like this, though.
Oh, yeah.
10 million on the line?
Oh, yeah.
That's a Friday at the MGM
yeah.
for Phil.
That's nothing.
Oh, sorry. Low-hanging fruit there. I saw that ESPN Stoke went through and actually, you know, I got to pause on this. I got to pause on that story and we'll get to it in a second. I got to bounce this off you. I couldn't believe what I read this morning. There was a picture posted by Ryan Leaf on his Instagram account. Okay, that had a letter from Hunter S. Thompson.
Who is that?
He is an author. Okay, he is an author. He, you'll know one of his works. Fear and Loathing Las Vegas. You ever heard of that?
Yeah, I've read it a few times.
He wrote that book. Johnny Depp starred in the movie Fear and Loathing Las Vegas. It's about these guys who are tripped out and they're doing a bunch of drugs and da-da-da-da. He also spent a year with the Hells Angels and wrote a book in the 70s about the Hells Angels. He was embedded for a year and wrote about the violence and just the crazy things that happened on the road.
So he
was popular for a while as an author. And he was responding to this. This is almost even hard to comprehend. Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, reached out to Hunter S. Thompson for a $30 million loan in the late 90s. And the $30 million loan was to cover the contract of who Jim Irsay drafted with the number one overall pick in the draft. Which I just, nowadays, just wouldn't even make sense.
Right.
Like, could you imagine the Cleveland Browns reaching, who's the owner of the Browns? Whatever. It doesn't, Haslam, right? Imagine Haslam reaching out to a filmmaker, asking for $30 million to cover the contract to Baker Mayfield. That's what this was.
Yeah. Really odd. But back then, it was a different day and age when it comes to football and teams. And, you know, Art Modell had to sell the Ravens because of his financial situation. He had too much money that he owed because he was just taking on debt and getting loans, and he couldn't pay it back. And his debt got too high where the NFL was like, well, you got to sell your team. Your debt's too high. We can't keep going down this road with you. And that would think – you would laugh at that now if an NFL owner had that kind of situation.
Right.
It's like, wait,
it wouldn't
what?
Even make, it wouldn't
no,
even make sense.
Like, yeah, it's like, huh?
But this wasn't in the 40s. This is 1998.
Yep.
It's just crazy, and it speaks to how far the league has come in terms of making money. I mean, an owner would never reach out. I mean, you would have to be just mishandling, you know, tens and tens and millions of dollars, which I guess people do. But this article was fascinating because when Jim Irsay reaches out – Hunter S. Thompson. Hunter S. Thompson responds to Jim Irsay in a letter, and it's very short, and I'll read it to you here. He says, "Dear James," which is what he must have called Jim, "in response to your addled request for a quick $30 million, right? For a quick $30 million loan to secure the services of the Manning kid, I have to say no at this time." But he goes on, Stoke, quote, "But the Leaf boy is another matter. He looks strong," obviously relating to Ryan Leaf. "But the Leaf boy is another matter. He looks strong and Manning doesn't, or at least not strong enough to handle that. Welcome to the NFL business for 2 years without a world-class offensive line. How are you fixed that left offensive tackle for the next few years, James? Think about it. You don't want a China doll back there when that freak sap comes crashing in. Okay, let me know if you need some money for Leaf. I expect to be very rich when this Depp movie comes out." And that Depp movie was Fear and Loathing Las Vegas.
Yes.
So he essentially
said... That did make money. That actually lost money.
It lost money. Right, right, right. You're all over it.
This guy was so wrong in everything that he wrote here.
Right.
So he didn't make money on the movie, and this Leaf boy...
But that Leaf boy's another man.
Yeah, he looks strong.
And he underlined strong. I mean, this is...
How
this
classic is this
unbelievable.
Yep. I mean, it's a piece of history.
You know, and I got to tell you this. Credit to Jim Irsay for not letting the finances of it bend who he really liked, because this guy's saying, "I got your $30 million. I got your quick $30 million loan, but it's for Ryan Leaf. I'm not paying that money for Peyton Manning."
Well, credit to Jim Irsay for not, listening to Hunter S. Thompson when it comes to NFL and listening to his general manager, Bill Polian, the architect.
The architect.
That's why you had Bill Polian on the staff, to let him decide the football matters and not Hunter S. Thompson.
I mean, that is an unbelievable story, because that really could have changed with a...
Is it S or C?
S. Hunter S. Thompson.
Okay.
S. He was a wild dude, that dude. He was drugs, crazy. He actually invented a form of journalism where the author actually becomes part of the story and gets tied up within the story, and he just, you know, he...
Eventually, is he still alive?
No. Per his wishes, he got his ashes shot out of a cannonball in front of Jack Nicholson.
All right.
What? And that everything I just said is literal. That's what happened.
Okay.
So pretty wild story. And I guess good of Ryan Leaf to post the picture. So post a picture of the letter. If you haven't seen it, you got to see it. Very, very interesting story. Stoke, ESPN Insider ranked all 32 backfields in the NFL. They put the Denver Broncos 30th out of 32 teams. Fair or unfair?
I think a little bit unfair. I think they should be 31.
Oh, wow.
Heading into the season anyway. I mean, who has proven anything in this backfield? And, you know, we kind of hit on it a little bit earlier, but when you look at the backfields in the NFL, I mean, the only one, and they put them behind, they put the Texans and the Colts behind them.
Yep.
And the Texans should be ahead of the Broncos, and the Colts probably should be behind the Broncos. So I think heading into the season with a lot of unknowns, Booker being the veteran presence, and then a lot of guys that really haven't played, we don't know. Now, after the season, we might look back and say this is a top 15 group.
The chances of that happening feel borderline unrealistic. And I'm just trying to be as honest as possible. Because, you know, when they come out with these rankings, when ESPN Insider does this, they don't have, like, some agenda. if you were to try to diagnose who this room is, who the running back room is in Denver, it's a mystery. I mean, if you contacted someone from Oregon, or no, that's a bad example. If you contacted someone from New Mexico and said, who's Devontae Booker? Unless they're like a hardcore fantasy player, they have no idea. They don't know D'Angelo Henderson. And they may know Royce Freeman if they watch college football. But Royce Freeman wasn't a first or second rounder, he wasn't among the first five running backs picked. So here's my main takeaway. I'm looking at this and I'm looking at, you know, who they have as their top three projected backs and their projected unit stats. Am I optimistic about the running back room? Yes, I am. But I don't want to let my optimism be converted into real expectations, because those are two very different things.
It's an unknown group, young group. So that's all you really have is the hope that it turns out for the best. And you look at Royce Freeman, a lot of expectations here. Why? Because we haven't seen him. Booker, not so much. We've seen a lot of him. And then after that, I mean, you just have unknowns everywhere. And my expectations and my hopes are built in, not just with the hearing all the good things that we've heard about a guy like Royce Freeman, but also it's built in the fact that, you know, we upgraded our quarterback position, and that will help the running back group. Oh, you know what? Our offensive line will be better this year, and that will help the running back group. This passing game will be better. That will help the running back group. So I'm looking at it from that perspective of all these little things that they've done this offseason, and that will help this young group be better than what it was last year. And I'm hoping that Royce Freeman is a more explosive back than what we've seen here for the last couple years. And we'll be able to break tackles and turn those 3-yard gains into 5.5 yards. And I'm hoping that D'Angelo Henderson continues to show what we saw last year.
Well, I am taking a wait-and-see approach because there's nothing else that I can do.
That's it.
Like, I can't tell you what Royce Freeman's going to be. I can't even tell you who Devontae Booker's going to be after 253 career carries. I don't know.
And that's why it's so hard to evaluate the running backs. When you got guys that you drafted 6th, 7th round, 3rd round, and you got a Booker, how are you going to evaluate the running backs this year before the first game? How many opportunities will you have to truly evaluate these guys before you say, that's our guy? When running backs, you need to evaluate running backs by what? How do they run through the line of scrimmage when somebody's trying to tackle them? And can they break that tackle? Do they know when to cut back and be able to break a tackle? How many opportunities do they get?
That's
how many
a great
opportunities
question.
Do they get before training, before that first game? Because I can watch them out there in practice on that first day of practice in training camp. And you see a guy cut back and it looks like, oh, that looked like a good run. But all of a sudden in a game, when they're tackling, they're not doing that the first day of training camp. When they're actually tackling, what does it look like then?
You know,
did he get tripped up or did he run through that arm tackle? How do you know? And for running backs, that's it. That's how you determine if the guy's going to be good or not. And obviously we haven't seen it so far because there's been no tackling. And how many opportunities will they have during camp? And we talked about with Jamaal Charles last year. He had one chance against the Packers. That was it, to prove if he could play or if he couldn't play. And with a guy like Royce Freeman, how many times is he going to go live action before the first game? Obviously, you'll have 4 preseason games. And other than that, how many more opportunities?
But you bring up the preseason games before it counts against Seattle on September 9th. It's not just about Royce Freeman. You're going to have to evaluate Booker still, Freeman, D'Angelo, David Williams, and Phillip Lindsay.
Yep. How are you supposed to make an accurate decision on the guy? And last year, Kansas City kind of fell into it because their starter got hurt. And
Very
then they
true.
Just had to turn it over
Very
to
true.
Kareem Hunt.
Very true. I hope by the end of the preseason, we're all on the same page who it should be. But I got real doubts that could eventually be the case, because it may be like, well, this guy had a little this game and this
right.
guy. And we go into the season with this gray area ambiguity, and it's not.
He had one good game, and then this guy had a better game here, and he didn't look good that third game, and you're kind of like, Who is it? Who is the guy?
Right.
Booker's looking like last year, but he remember that those couple plays he had in that second preseason game against the Bears? Those were nice and gives you hope, but one guy needs to step up to the plate and say, look at that guy during training camp. Man, he was alone. Against the Vikings, against the Bears,
right.
Against the Redskins, and we didn't even play him against the Cardinals because those three games, he is the real deal. When you put the pads on, man, is this guy a difference maker. That's what you need, because if you don't have that, who are you going to say is your guy? Who is it? You just roll out Booker because he's the most tenured of the group, and he's had the most carry, so, you know, by fault. Because nobody looks special. You don't have a first-round running back, so you're not going to give it to that guy.
That's the one word I don't like, and you just used it. Default.
Right.
Remember that article?
Yes.
So, well, Booker's the back by default.
I don't remember the article, but yes.
It's like, wait, what?
That's what happened,
He's
though.
A running back in pro football by default?
And No. That's what happened with CJ last year. He was just a starter every single game by default. Really. I know he rushed for over 1,000, but it wasn't a good 1,000. You could have changed it up a little bit. And so are we going to be in that scenario again this year where it's just, hey, I don't know who to pick? I mean, they all look pretty decent, but nobody looks great, so you just go to the more tenured guy, and Booker right. was next in line. Here you go, Book. Here you go, buddy.
Turning my stomach.
It's a weekend. That's what I do.
Hunter S. Thompson was shot out of a cannon in Aspen.
Oh, how about that?
He ran for sheriff in Pitkin County up in Aspen. Didn't work out for him, but his ashes are somewhere out there. All right. If Jim Irsay drafts Ryan Leaf and Peyton goes number two to the Chargers, what happens to you?
What happens to me? That is a good question.
The butterfly effect wouldn't bring you here.
I don't know. Bill Polian said he always liked me in college, so I might have still been there. I might have been with the Chargers and breaking the Broncos' hearts with the Chargers instead of with the Colts. So who knows?
I love it. There's never an off season for talking Broncos, and that continues with our guys, Big Al and D-Mac, with The Drive coming up next.